It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
To episode 96 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favorite combat sports podcast, hosted by two dudes who can't fight and know way less about fighting than they think they do. I'm your host, Lewis, and I'm joined once again by my main man, Jamie. What is going on, man? It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, brother. Just happy to be in town. We've had some pretty interesting fights lately, so happy to dive in and chat about them, huh?
We have. I feel like a lot's been going on in the combat sports world, and we haven't recorded an episode for like 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, like a whole bunch of crazy shit happens. Big fights happen. Breaking news happens. Upsets galore happen. And it's just like, I need an outlet. I need an outlet to talk about it and fire off some wicked piping hot takes or some freezing cold takes. And yeah, see where we land up. But I guess the place to start, we've got to start with what's happened most recently. And the combat sports world is eating the biggest fucking humble pie that's ever been served. Because what Francis Ngannou did over the weekend, and if you haven't seen it or paid attention to it, I don't know what rock you've been living under. But what he did was so impressive. And I was so wrong. I know at the start of the show, we tell you we don't know what the hell we're talking about. At least I wasn't alone in this. Nobody foresaw this coming. I don't care what receipts you think you can dig up. Not a man alive had this prediction that he didn't win. He didn't win on the scorecards. But no one thought this outcome would happen. Are you kidding me?
What are you fucking talking about? What are you talking about? Mike Tyson knew this for a fact. Just because he's walking away with his pockets full of Saudi Arabian oil and tiger skins doesn't mean that he didn't absolutely believe that Ngannou was going to beat this guy. There's no, you can't tell me otherwise.
I absolutely will. Mike Tyson still owes money to the IRS, and he does anything for a book these days. And he definitely wasn't actually Francis Ngannou's coach either. He was just another one of these Saudi photo ops. Now, don't get me wrong. There were people saying he might shock the world, he might land a shot, etc., etc. But no one expected him to like maybe actually outbox Tyson Fury and to actually maybe win over 10 rounds. Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff to get into with this, and we don't really talk a lot of boxing on this show. And if you think we don't know shit about mixed martial arts, oh buddy, you're going to be even more disappointed when it comes to our in-depth boxing assessment. But I don't know, man. It was so impressive. And he did really go away and he tricked the world. He brought in a completely different game plan that no one thought. And he finessed everyone. He absolutely finessed everyone. He bet on himself and he put it all on fucking 00 on the roulette wheel. And he hit. He hit at like 50 to 1. He hit the longest of shots, man. It was unreal.
I think you're right when you say he tricked everyone, because you look at that open workout and you think that's the boxing caliber that we're going to get. We're going to get big old Francis Ngannou with his normal person's leg is the size of that cunt's bicep. Like, he is just going to destroy anyone. I was watching this live with someone and they didn't know anything about this. And I told her, you know, this guy has the hardest punch. It's the equivalent of getting hit by, what was it, a Ford Escort or an equivalent of a car.
Yeah.
And we're like, right, so the thing is, Fury's going to win. And she's like, why is that? Because he is. Like, this guy's made to lose. But there's a chance that he might knock him the fuck out. very unlikely because big punches like Deontay Wilder have tried to knock this gun out, and he's a professional boxer with insane punching power. So it just didn't seem right. And then we're looking at the open workouts. He's looking slow. He's looking tired just by doing general boxing stance. Fight starts, completely different stance.
In the open workout, it looked like he'd done a shift back in the sand mines just to get ready and then had done the open workout. He's just like, once more for old time's sake, let me get back and shovel half a ton of sand before I jump on these pads. He finessed everyone. And you know what? Like, obviously, physiques don't mean like anything. Otherwise, I'd be heavyweight champion of the world with this rig that I've got going.
You know, I mean, if anything's to go.
Well, yeah. If you dropped an alien from outer space and just lined them up and said, which one of these guys is the heavyweight champion of the world? You'd be like, well, obviously not that fat pikey. Like, it would be Francis Ngannou. It'd be very, very easy to just throw this out and go, yeah, well, obviously Tyson Fury didn't train and prepare for this. He didn't take it seriously, which is true, which is obviously true. If watch the fight, if you've ever seen Tyson Fury before and so on and so forth, fine. Let's park that for a second. What Francis Ngannou did, his game plan was just so incredible. And he didn't get caught up in the moment. Like, he could have continued to bull rush Tyson Fury after he got that knockdown. But that wasn't the game plan. The game plan wasn't to get in and get out and try to, you know, in three rounds with a knockout and see what he could do. He went in there with a game plan to actually try and outbox Tyson Fury, which is mental. It was one of those, it's so crazy, it might just work kind of scenarios. Like, what if I just walked into a bank and walked into the safe without talking to anyone and then just walked out with a bag of cash? Like, it's so brazen, it might just work. I don't know, man.
I feel like I kind of had like a little PTSD moment where I was like, oh, he's going to do what he did with Stipe. He's going to try to find some success in the first fight. And then he just gasses out and Stipe fucking, you know, he just walks him around for the rest of the fight while he's just exhausted. And I think maybe that was his thing. It's like, if I continue to press Tyson Fury, I'm going to get caught up. And like, I feel like it's just so intelligent to do that. I feel like if he really pushed the advantage, maybe he could have got that knockout. But I don't know, man. It's like, if you have any history or any kind of like knowledge of Tyson Fury and what he does, it's he makes people miss. People don't land cleanly on him ever, despite the size of the gun's body. But good on him, man. I felt like he won the fight. I feel like he would have squeaked it out. I think, yeah, that's just like from watching it the first time, though. You know,
sure. It was a close fight, but you know what? The scorecards don't matter in this instance. It only became a sanctioned professional fight like 2 days before. The British Boxing Board of Control only got involved in this card days out from the fight. The belt wasn't on the line. It was 10 three-minute rounds. So ultimately, what judges saw what, it doesn't matter. And boxing scorecards are so fucky anyway. There is no unified...
Bullshit. No, boxing is the most clean sport I've ever heard of in my life. It's ruled by angels. Everyone does things by the books. They barely pass money around as well, Lewis. Like, this is a well-known...
Oh, yeah. Fact. No, that's so true. I forgot about that. That is actually the way it usually goes in boxing. But the fact that, A, he didn't get flattened, B, he didn't get stood on his head and suffer like traumatic brain injury, which genuinely I thought it was far more likely in the range of outcomes that Tyson Fury boxed his head off so badly, we never see Francis Ngannou fight in combat sports again. I thought that was a more likely proposition than what actually unfolded. Like, way more likely in my mind before this fight. Once again, I refer you to the statement at the start of the show. Clearly, we don't know shit. But it was just so unlikely, and I'm flabbergasted by it. But the score doesn't matter. Tyson Fury's reputation and legacy at the moment is on life support.
Yeah,
and Francis Ngannou's reputation, legacy, and like, who's the real world winner from this? He's got more options than anyone on the planet right now. There's four or five different potential boxing opportunities for him. He could obviously do a PFL. If he wanted to, he could probably force his way back into the UFC on a one or two fight deal and figure something out there if that's what he wants to do. I'm sure he doesn't, but hey, wouldn't you think that maybe he would like to just go back to Dana make Dana like lick his boots and say, actually, I will come back. I'm now the, he right now, I know Conor McGregor like is in a different stratosphere, but right now there isn't a bigger name in the world of combat sports than Francis Ngannou, which is insane because one of the criticisms of him in the UFC was that he didn't move pay-per-views. And that's not a criticism of Francis Ngannou himself. Maybe, and the UFC knows how to promote mainly, but there was just this, it just didn't work. Francis Ngannou didn't sell pay-per-views. There was a disconnect. Francis, at the time, got a lot of criticism for what he did. I hold my hands up, Francis. I owe you an apology, big man. And I never was upset with Francis, who any right to be upset with him. But what I mean is, I never said, how do I put this? I thought he made a bad decision. Yeah. And I thought it's because he wasn't going to be able to, I thought he'd overestimated his worth and maybe he'd be getting some bad advice. And that was based off of his lack of ability to say pay-per-views, the fact that I didn't think he had any boxing ability, at least at the highest level whatsoever. I'm really outside of the UFC. There are no viable heavyweights in MMA for him to fight, really. So there was nothing that you could hang your hat on at that time to go, oh yeah, Francis made a good decision. He bet on himself and he's going to make all the money in the world. It just didn't seem viable. Added on top of that, and I think this is where the upset that everyone has or had with him, or just not even with him, but with the situation, because he turned down a shitload of money from the UFC, not once at the end, but twice, because he wanted to get to free agency. Multiple times, the UFC tried to get deals done with him where he'd be making $3, $4, $5 million a fight. And he turned them down and kept fighting at lower amounts of money because if he signed the new deal, it would have prolonged his stay with the UFC.
Yeah.
And he wanted to fulfill his dream of boxing. And then he obviously had the deal, the fight, the offer to John Jones. Was it $8 million? Was it $20 million? How many fights on the deal was it? So on and so forth. And I think part of the problem is, again, problem is the wrong word, but I think the way people process it is we are normal people. All of, well, so-so.
But I mean, like, yeah, normal in most capacities, but we ain't making $1 million a fight. Let's put it that way.
Right. And so it's inconceivable to 99.9% of the population to walk away from that much money with no other future plans guaranteed and be so confident in yourself and be such a special, unique individual that we can't comprehend it. We don't understand it. And when we don't understand and comprehend something, typically, then the usual reaction is to go, oh, that's shit, and to shun it and to criticize it and to say, well, I wouldn't have done that to make yourself feel better. And that's what everyone did.
There was such a long time before the PFL.
It was so long. And the PFL deal was, on paper, it sounded great. And then you started to pick holes in it. And then he wasn't going to have an opponent. And everyone's going, he's like, great. He runs PFL Africa. Great. PFL Africa doesn't fucking exist. So congratulations. And it really seemed like he hadn't made the right decision. How the hell was he going to get Tyson Fury into the ring with him? It didn't make any sense. And I tell you what, that man needs to be applauded. And I will never, ever doubt Francis Ngannou again. The belief that that man has in himself to go through the things that he's done and experienced in his life, to turn down that financial security, knowing what his family has come from, knowing where they've been, knowing what just a few million dollars would make difference in his family's life, to turn that down and walk away because he believes he can do better and he knew he could do better is staggering. The only sort of similar story that comes to mind right away, and you'll appreciate this because, you know, you're one of those actor types, is Matthew McConaughey. McConaughey turned down millions upon millions of dollars to do rom-coms when he decided that he didn't want to be a rom-com actor anymore and he wanted to be a serious actor. It got to the point where, like, he said, you know, to his agent, do not get me one of these movies. I will not do it. And he got an offer in at $5 million. The studio ended up going up to $20 million to do a shitty rom-com. And he said no. And at that point, like, the whole industry was like, oh no, McConaughey's serious. He might be completely insane, but he's serious. And it was obviously the best decision he ever made. He's won Oscars and done everything. He's like actor, generational talent actor, and so on and so forth. But he had to get the stink of shitty rom-com movies off him. Now, Francis didn't have the stink to get off him. Like, my point is, like, he to have such faith and resolve to turn down so much money when it's just, I will never doubt. What? That should be a new game show. Just put Francis Ngannou in situations and have him solve them. I mean, send him to the fucking Middle East right now. He'll get it sorted in a day. Francis Ngannou will sort out the Gaza Strip situation like tomorrow. Done.
Get him in there.
Get it sorted.
You're so right about, like, you know, what that value could do. Because when you come from, like, you know, so much poverty and everything like that, and still, like, let's just say with the UFC, he's probably been getting pretty good money in comparison. But you still think the amount of money, what you said, could do for his family, could do for his community, could do for, you know, everyone that he loves and who they love as well, exponentially, what the UFC could have given him could have absolutely blown that out of the water. But he just inherently having that self-value and that self-worth, just thinking that money isn't the priority right now. This is an amount of money that could do good. I want to be able to change everyone's lives for generations to come.
Yeah, imagine...
Unbelievable.
Imagine picking up the phone to your family, and these in Cameroon, who you know, not financially blessed, and they're going, you turned down how much from the UFC?
We could buy the fucking country. Like, what's going on? We could buy the sand mine. What are you talking about?
Yeah. How's that for Uno reverse card? Francis Ngannou buys the sand mine. And then actually, the sand, that's the plan all along. The sand mine is going to become the feeder league to PFL Africa. And he's just going to have an absolute army of fucking monsters straight out of the sand mines. But in all seriousness, when you think about it and then just stop and go back and go, actually, the man's story, what he went through, he makes Andy Dufresne from Shawshank crawling through a tunnel of shit look like a stroll in the park on a Saturday afternoon. Like, that struggle from Shawshank is associated with, like, absolutely insanity. I'll put Francis Ngannou's story up against anyone's in terms of struggle and overcoming and, like, putting your life on the line over and over and over again for the chance to chase a dream. Mm. And he did it, man. And you can't not be happy for the guy. And it's a shame that it took, like, this to happen for everyone to get there. But he's all of a sudden, like, no one has a higher approval rating right now in sports than Francis Ngannou. Like no one's got a bad word to say about the guy. And I've never heard anyone say a bad word about him in terms of, like you see interviews and you hear people. He just seems like the nicest chap. But again, you were just like, oh, is this guy getting bad advice? Is he being taken advantage of? No. It turns out that he was Kaiser Soze all along. Francis Ngannou was just running this shit. He knew exactly what he was doing. And I'm so impressed by it all, man. I'm just thrilled for the guy. And like I said, whatever he wants to do next, A, he's going to make like 20 million bucks minimum for whatever he does. And B, I'm not saying he can't do it. Like, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on fat, shitty, slow Tyson Fury. And fool me three times, just I'll never ever speak in front of a microphone again. Yeah, man, can't doubt him. If Francis Ngannou says he's going to do something, you best believe he's going to do it.
I think the interesting thing with, like, you know, you got Eddie Hearn coming out and he's just like, well, you know, Francis won that fight. It's just like, so we're going to put him in the top 10 rankings of boxing and we're going to set up, was it AJ he was talking about?
Talking about Anthony Joshua. And I tell you what, man, Anthony Joshua is in a very, 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 precarious position with his boxing career right now because he's trying to rebuild it and he's looked like shit. And he doesn't have confidence. And the last thing he wants to do is get in there with someone who punches like Francis Ngannou and is as confident. You couldn't find a greater discrepancy in confidence in the ring right now than Anthony Joshua versus Francis Ngannou. Mm. Like, completely polar opposites. And so, yeah, man, having said that, you will also, despite what I just said, all of those things about Francis, you still have to, the logic part of my brain is going, yeah, I know what we just saw, but surely he doesn't beat Anthony Joshua, fucking Olympic medalist, three-time world champion. Like, surely not. And then you go, yeah, but it's Francis Ngannou now. You have to believe that he could do it if he says he's going to do it. It's madness.
Do you think there's something to, because obviously a lot of these guys, these they're not training against people that would be so unorthodox. They're training against people who have trained boxing their entire lives. They've trained, you know, the English style of boxing, the Mexican style of boxing, the Ukrainian style, you know, Soviet style of boxing, all these different styles. It's not an MMA sandmine driven monster.
Like, yeah, you know, I think the sandmine is the bigger variable here than even like styles, because he was trying to do quite, let's say, orthodox boxing. He wasn't, apart from the fucking Superman punch, but like, he boxed well. He didn't look like a fish out of water. And I think, you nail on the head, do you think he was preparing for this style or that style? I don't think Tyson Fury prepared whatsoever. And I don't want to spend long on this because it sounds like I'm discrediting Francis Ngannou, and I don't want to, but there's no doubt about it. Tyson Fury did not train for this fight. I don't care what the weight on the scale said. He was fat. He was slow. He didn't have any speed and have any pop. He was weak in the clinch. Now, Francis is always going to be stronger in the clinch because he's Francis Ngannou, but still, Tyson Fury looked like absolute sloppy horse meat. He was horrible, man. He was. I haven't seen him ever look that bad. And yeah, okay, he got dropped. Tyson can get dropped from now and again, but he gets back up, and he got back up in this instance, but he looked like shit, man. And his reputation previously was up here. Post Wilder, his reputation as one of the all-time greats. He was on the precipice of doing something incredible. What a trilogy. The Klitschko, the redemption, the coming down from 400 pounds, the was on the edge of killing himself, the mental demons, the drug addictions, everything. He built himself up. And in the last 2 years, the shit with Anthony Joshua, the shit with Alexander Usyk, and now this? Yeah, legacy, man, in tatters. Until he fixes this and A, beats Francis Ngannou in a boxing match, and B, stands Alexander Usyk on his head over a trilogy. Francis, keep mixing their names up. Tyson Fury's reputation is so worse off than was a week ago.
Well, that's the thing. You say all these, like, you're right, so you've overcome this, you've overcome that, you've overcome that. It's like, yeah, but you had a flaw though, right? And it's like, oh, but you didn't travel across a continent in a rubber dinghy made of, you know, probably other people's skin, right? You didn't get left in the desert and have to drink, you know, poison and just get kidnapped and get you left in jail, though, right? It's like, there's this perspective thing that suddenly happens. It's like, once this whoever's story, like, you know, they both have fucking crazy, amazing comeback stories, but one of them right now just fucking put it on him, and we're looking at this story now. We're like, oh, wait, the fuck, this perspective here. What the fuck? You guys had a house? Are you serious? Fucking crazy.
Tyson Fury didn't have to shelve €100 worth of change up his ass and carry it through the desert. Like, Francis Ngannou had to hide money in his ass so it wouldn't get taken from him as he marched across the desert and passed checkpoints as a refugee. Like, lucky this is what
would have taken them out of him, mate. I mean, they're going to be searching every fucking dollar they get. They'll be crawling.
Bob Arum would have had his fingers up his arsehole if he had known. Looking for every last penny.
Let's get it.
But yeah, just absolutely insane, man. I guess the takeaway is just like, oh, and by the way, the Francis Ngannou movie that's going to be made is going to be incredible. And I saw the greatest casting shout, and I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but you've seen the Black Panther, right? The Marvel movie, Black Panther.
Yeah. Let's get the main guy again. Yeah. We'll I'm sure they can.
What's he doing these days? What's the Black Panther doing these days? No. The guy from like the rival tribe who he like.
Oh shit, the Creed guy. What's his I'm forgetting.
Is he in Creed?
Yeah, isn't he Creed? Isn't that the guy?
No, not him. Not him. Not Michael B. Jordan.
Not Michael B. Jordan. That's the guy. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of.
No.
Why don't you just get fucking Francis Ngannou to play him? I mean, like, who else is? Oh, is it the last Creed movie? The bad guy in that movie?
No, he's cancelled. I'm pretty sure he's done.
Oh, good.
Pretty sure that guy's
in that story. He came from jail and boxed in jail and then fought.
Yeah, no, he's done. Andy Serkis. That's who I was thinking of.
Andy Serkis, the guy who played Gollum in Lord of the Rings.
No. I'm joking. But he was in Black Panther. No, I'm. Winston Duke, the guy who had like the big animal skins on him, and
Big Boy, yeah, from the
Boy.
Good shout.
He's massive.
He's 196, 1.96 meters. Yeah, 36 years old as well. Hey, we're getting there.
Yeah, like that could be him.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, no, I mean, that's not bad. But then again, Francis Ngannou does have a movie credit, right? Isn't he in... He's in that movie with fucking Sylvester Stallone and The Expendables or something.
Expendables?
Like that.
Is he?
He's in one of those movies as a bad guy that you just immediately...
Really?
Yeah.
I bet he's a terrible actor. I don't believe Francis Ngannou can do anything else.
Yeah, but I mean... Fast and Furious 9, maybe. That was it. Yeah, F9.
Had it? So that must be that. Yeah.
I was just like, some extreme movie that's over the top that I just don't want to watch another one of. It's either the Fast and Furious franchise or the Expendables, but there it is. Oh, and he's also in Jackass Forever, if anyone hasn't seen that, punching what's his name in the dick, which is fucking hilarious.
Oh, it's incredible. It's one of the best. I will never, ever, ever, ever not laugh when I see that.
Right. So this bit, is there a difference if you're wearing a cup and you're getting punched by a professional fighter? Do you think that the difference between Justin Gaethje punching you in the dick or Francis Ngannou punching you in the dick, do you think that there's that much of a difference between, you know, you getting scrotal surgery? Or do you think it's just like an impact thing that once it gets to a certain level of vibration, it's just like that's...
It's like you mean that's like diminishing returns? Like, it's unless it's actually like squashing your balls and exploding them, like... The thing, I don't know, man, but all I know is Francis Ngannou didn't put everything into that punch. That's what I do know. So he might have killed Danger Aaron if he threw everything into that punch.
Just you see his little missing tooth, just like part of his sack, just filtered through.
You know what the worst thing? You know what the worst and best thing about that scene is? They do like four of the cup tests or segments in that cup test. Francis Ngannou get punching him in the balls might be the least bad of the other options. They're all truly terrible. If you held a gun to my head and said you're gonna have to choose which one of these, I might have to go Francis Ngannou because the other ones were so brutal.
You just gotta think he's kind. Maybe
that's what I'm gonna lean on. I'm like, hey Francis, you're a nice guy. You know, I'm not done having kids yet.
Yeah, well, you know. Let's be honest, it's probably a pop. But otherwise, we're happy for him. And we want this movie to come out and it's going to be fucking amazing. It has to be. I mean, there's even just looking at the promo that was set for this fight, fucking astounding, right? Like, how?
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, I would love to see a line by line item. And this is the boring tax guy coming out of me. But what the fuck did the Saudi Arabian government sink into this? Yeah. Like, how much were they paying all of those individuals to be there? Like, what was the average appearance fee for the Ronaldos, the Pacquiao's, the McGregor's, everyone? How much cash in an envelope was waiting for all of these dudes in their penthouse suites with Rolex watches?
It's got to be different from person to person. I think they just rolled out like two slabs of Pat's Blue Ribbon for Chuck Liddell. You know, so there's... He just came. He came a knocking. The Iceman a cometh. It's gonna be a case by case. Man, I am. Yeah, it is a stunning photo though.
Oscar De La Hoya. There was just a wheelbarrow full of cocaine. Like that was his appearance fee. Who else was there? Oh yeah, it was. Yeah, for old original fat Ronaldo, it was just a penthouse full of cheeseburgers. Like everyone just had their vices accounted towards. For Mike Tyson, it was just another tiger.
De La Hoya, I don't think they actually gave him the floor coke. They're just like, they gave him the opportunity afterwards to find whatever he could find off the floor. They're not going to clean up first. They're just going to let him scrounge around and find some floor coke in Saudi.
They know what they said. They said, Oscar, if you put on these fishnet tights and high heels again, you can just crawl around after Conor McGregor on your hands and knees and sniff his excess droppings.
Lick whatever spills off him. I bet he's in USADA discipline now, so probably, you know, I don't know.
Oh yeah, I'm sure USADA are taking their job really fucking seriously right now.
Speaking of USADA, are they completely done immediately or is there like a cool down?
And 31 of December, they stop being the testing partner and this new mob take over.
There you go.
Just as an aside, like there's no downtime because the new people just take over. The policy has always been the UFC's policy They write it and create it. USADA just do the logistics and administration of it. So it's like taking your photographs to get developed at one place and then taking them to another place the next day and just kind of like crack on. I don't know where I came up with photographs. What year is it? Was it 1997? Taking photographs to get developed. What am I talking about?
No one knows what that is anymore.
The millennials are like, listen to this. Like, what is this old man talking about? Right. Let's move on from Fury Ghani because we've already spent 30 minutes talking about it. Wow. And like I said, we haven't talked about UFC 294 and I'm still not over it. And my heart is still in 1,000 pieces seeing Alex Volkanovski A, get knocked the fuck out. And then B, how sad he was at the post fight. I was just devastated for him, man. Look,
the Alex Volkanovski fan in me still thinks he won that fight. It's like, no, he was like true fucking, what was it, Dominic Cruz fashion. Yeah, he's just using his face to wear out his shins.
Yeah. You know, yeah, actually,
out right now.
If you actually assess this fight properly on the criteria, the damage on Islam Makhachev's foot and shin was astronomical.
Yeah. But man, it's sad, but I mean, it goes to show that preparation, like, you know, just talking about the Fury fight, talking about this, it's so fucking important, man. And it just kind of seems that, you know, some people, like, you know, who dare to be great, it's incredible that they're doing it. But when you come up short and you're the best in your division, it's just best to sort of stick around and do what you do, because there's a bigger fish and that's their territory sometimes. And it just kind of seems like his place.
Well, you know what? If Volkanovski gets his way back there one more time, you know I'm going to bet on Volkanovski and you know I'm going to pick him, because I've seen enough to think that he can get it done. I've seen it. I know he can. I know it's there.
Right. You sound like you're dating a narcissist right now, because it's just like, no, I've seen this bit of greatness here, but he keeps, oh, now I get disappointed. Now I'm going to draw you back in and you're going to get gaslit the fuck up. It's crazy, dude.
You sound like you're talking from experience there, Jamie.
No idea what you're talking about.
Jamie Trezellian, you sound like talking from experience.
I've just been listening to all these like mansplain podcasts, you know, just trying to get my sense of self-worth back. I'm sad for him. I don't think he's going to go back up. Not while
he's I don't think he will yet. I think he wants to fight Topuria in January. By the way, the next day it looked like his cut had already healed. He's fucking Wolverine, man. It's ridiculous. So I think he goes back and fights Topuria in January. And honestly, I think Ilya Topuria is in trouble. I think he's going to be one of his best tests. Volkanovski is going to train like a man possessed after this. He's going to leave no stone unturned. And he is going to work harder and for longer than he's ever worked before, because he's now on legacy watch. You can't get knocked out by Islam Makhachev and then come back down to your division and lose to an upstart contender like Ilya Topuria. He will be champion one day. He will not be champion next year. Volkanovski will handle him. There might be a fourth fight with Max now, because it's kind of like, well, Volk can't go up, so you have to tend to your garden. You have to take on the challenges here. Maybe Arnold Allen works his way in. I know Arnold Allen fell short against Max Holloway. Maybe you do you rebook Calvin Kattar versus Arnold Allen, or Arnold Allen versus someone else in the division. You get him a title opportunity.
See, this is
I don't know, man.
I was just thinking about this. Like, I thought Max Holloway and Ilya Topuria was like pre-booked or something, and then this came up, and maybe it was
flipped. No.
Was that never a thing?
No.
Because it just sort of seems like every time Max Holloway gets in the way of someone, he's just like, right, next contender, who's going to fight Alex Volkanovski? Well, Max Holloway just killed that guy, so he's not going to get
the point. I think that's the point. That's the point, because everyone's sure about Topuria. Everyone's like, yeah, he's going to be the next guy.
Yeah.
But there's every chance if you put him in front of Holloway, he gets dismantled. And you're like, well, what do we do now? So you kind of have to keep Holloway out of the way. And he's been lobbying for a fight with Gaethje. Holloway, actually, if anyone should go up to 55 permanently, it's Max Holloway. Send him up there. Let Volkanovski hang around at 45 for a little while longer. Maybe does one, two more defenses. Then he goes up to 55 and he can't be fast-tracked to a title. He fights a top three guy at lightweight. If he wins that, then maybe you get him in there. Imagine Volkanovski against Charles Oliveira. Imagine Volkanovski against Justin Gaethje. Imagine him against insert any name from the top of the lightweight tree.
Like a little bit of what you said, I think we give Max Holloway the featherweight belt back, let him reign over that division. Just get Alex Volkanovski, like, you know, put him up there permanently. He's training constantly at 155. Get him, you know, fresh lineup of things. He gets his opportunity to not simultaneously hold two belts, but at least he will be a two-weight division champion. And then Max Holloway can keep not getting brain damage from people at 155, because I don't want to see Justin Gaethje punch Max Holloway in the head and give him any more fucking reason to slur his fucking words. God damn it. I love him too much. I don't want him. I just can't handle it. Like, my heart can't handle it. I love Max Holloway too much. I don't want to see any more CTE. This is why he doesn't. Sure, this is why he doesn't fucking spar.
Oh, yeah, no. His doctor's been like, you've got like six good shots left to the head before it explodes.
I think Tony Ferguson took most of what Max Holloway's received in the last fucking six fights. But I think Max Holloway's, like, even though he's got the highest strike count, I'm pretty sure he's got a huge amount of strikes absorbed to the head as well. So it's, I don't know. Numbers don't lie. Ben, don't think he can count them. So let's reckon keep him away.
co-main event, I got to be honest, man. I thought it was a really bad decision. Having watched it back without the clouding of the beautiful Belgian drop of Stella Artois, impairing my judgment. Watched it back and I thought it was a draw. I thought Khamzat won the first round 10-8. Mm-hmm. And then I thought one and two went to Kamaru Usman. Just those were the third one was just, two and three, excuse me. But there was no way, if it went to decision, Khamzat Chimaev was not getting it. He's the new golden goose of the UAE. He's just he just gave up his Swedish citizenship, which, by the way, is one of the biggest dog moves you can ever do. Like, the country that welcomed him and his family in as refugees because he didn't want to get fucking blown up in Chechnya, flees to Sweden. They welcome him in. They give him everything. And then he's like, screw you guys. I'm going where the money is. Like, not cool, Khamzat Chimaev. But the UFC just signed an extension, a new deal with UAE, with Abu Dhabi. And then he's become a UAE citizen. UFC's got a new deal with Abu Dhabi. Simultaneously, Khamzat Chimaev signs a new deal where he's getting like minimum $3 million a fight with the UFC. What do you think's funding that deal? And who do you think's guaranteed to appear on every friggin' Abu Dhabi card from here until 2028, until whenever?
I'll tell you what, Lewis, the people of Abu Dhabi do. It's like they know exactly who is doing this.
Oh yeah, they know. But I tell you what, man, you can't give, and then we talked about a title shot. You can't give Khamzat Chimaev a title shot after that.
I don't think either. No.
Five rounds, main event, let's go. And you know what you could do? You could put that as the main event of UFC Saudi Arabia, because it's going to be a fight night. Non-title main event, five rounds, Khamzat Chimaev versus Kamaru Usman. You like that?
I like that. I a little bit disagree. I don't think Kamaru Usman won the fight. I thought it was close. But I mean, he just didn't seem to do enough. It wasn't like, there was no point where I thought Kamaru was going to win that fight. Like, maybe for 30 seconds of that fight. The rest of it, I just thought Chimaev just stonked through it.
But he didn't do anything.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's just like he's going against someone who's fucking incredible. You know, like he's fresh off the. If Kamaru Usman had a couple of weeks, I reckon it would have been a lot closer. But I don't know. It's just when it comes that close, and you know you're in that area. Obviously, they're just going to give the guy who.
Yeah, and it is what it is. And by the way, I bet on Khamzat Chimaev. It was like one of the only bets I friggin' hit that night, and it was my biggest bet because I was so confident that either short notice, you know, he would just run through him, or if it went to the judge, I didn't think Kamaru would stop him, and if it went to decision, he was getting the decision. It was a lot. But like I said, I think okay, we might not agree on the outcome of the fight, and that's fine. You know, you're usually wrong, and I'm usually right. That's fine. that's fine. But I think we can agree you can't give Khamzat a title shot after that.
No, exactly.
And so what else do you do with him in the division? Like, run it back.
I reckon you still have the Paulo Costa fight, sitting.
Yeah, I'll figure that out. But his elbow turned into a butthole. Did you see it?
Yeah, that's fucking disgusting.
It was horrific.
That I don't know. Just throw some secret juice on it or something, mate. It does not look fucking good, though. That is, not great.
I guarantee, by the way, Paulo Costa did pour secret juice on it to try to fix it. And that's what probably made it worse.
You know what? I just want to say, out of this card, if whoever put the, you know, the golden ticket of putting every Ov and Ev would have got their entire ticket fucking clipped, apart from the next fight that we were about to talk about, Magomed Ankalaev doing the shitty no decision.
That just sucked. The doctor was a mong, but that was it. But they still would have won because it just voids that line from the slip because it was a no contest.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty fucking easy way to get some money then, I think, if you're looking at friggin' multis. But what do you think about that, man? I think if it were the golden age of UFC, like it used to be, where soccer kicks were legal, you know, you got the Valley Tudo sort of stuff going on, I feel like Johnny Walker just throws the referee down to the ground, restarts the fight, and like everyone would have been happy with that.
Yeah.
Literally everyone would have been happy with that result. Just... no one's going to stop Johnny Walker, really, in that cage, apart from Magomed Ankalaev, and he looked like he wanted to fight. All these security guys, if Johnny Walker wanted to, really wanted to, he could murder every single person in that cage and get to him. So, I don't know, man. It's
yeah, you know what? My conclusion from this fight is I really, really do not like Magomed Ankalaev. He's a whiny bitch. I can't stand him. And it will be the worst thing for the division if he ever becomes champion. And everyone's got to break his legs to pieces with leg kicks to never, ever let this bum become champion because he's so boring. He's got no personality. And all he does is whine and bitch about everything. At least Johnny Walker's got personality. Yiri's got personality. Alex Pereira's got more personality than him. And he was like a bloody stone rock off Easter Island. Like, he's horrific. Be something. But he threw the illegal knee and then was like, oh, he didn't want to fight. He didn't want to fight. Shut up, Magomed. You bore me.
Yeah, man. You can't do illegal shit and then complain. It just is what it is. You don't see, like, you know, Piotr Jan complaining after he does the Aljamain knee thing. He takes like a champ, right? It's just like, you know. Be a champion, but obviously he's not going to
be. Yeah, they took he took it so well.
Yeah, he did. No, so bad. Dude, it's fucking disappointing. The thing is, I want to take away from this. I don't want to see that fight rematched. I would rather...
I do. Really? No, only because I want to see Johnny Walker beat the piss out of him. That, like, and I think he could.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
What else do you do? Like, the vision highest.
Johnny Walker versus Jan Błachowicz.
Piotr Jan?
Yeah. I'm not Piotr Jan. Yeah. No, Jan, Polish power.
Legendary Polish power. Oh, yeah. Man.
That's what I want to see. I want to see a stand-up battle. I want to see two people punch their dicks in. Let's go.
I don't want to see Jan Błachowicz, like, really fight anymore, kind of.
No.
you know when you said, like, oh, Max Holloway, like, I don't want to, like... I don't know, man. I don't want to see Jan lose again. And I feel like he's on that backslide where he's just going to keep losing.
Yeah. Look, you know what? This is a good call. I don't particularly like watching Rakic fight. I don't particularly like watching...
Make them fight. And I won't even watch it. And then don't have to see either of them fight. Brilliant.
Balance is maintained in the universe.
Yes, that is such a good call. Oh, yes. Put him in the apex. We don't have to watch it. Happy days.
Yeah, boy.
Why is Jamal Hill still listed as champion, by the way? What's that about?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm looking at a different list.
I'm just looking at the UFC's website. You think that might be up to date?
You think that? Was it number three? Ankalaev is above Jamal Hill right now? What? That doesn't make any sense. But hey, whatever. Fuck that fight. What else we have? What else we have on that? On that card. And did anything else exciting happen on that card?
By the way, I was looking at the rankings and I was like, there was a lot of action, a lot of movement in the welterweight division and everyone got moved up. And then I realized Khamzat's then been taken out of the welterweight rankings and officially
Of course.
Put in at middleweight. He's coming at number 9 in the middleweight rankings.
Oh, that's good. That's a good place for him. I mean, it doesn't mean he's immediately getting a title shot. It just means
Yeah, exactly. That's what it means because...
If he's coming out at number 5, then he's got a fucking argument for it, but, like, maybe not.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what? You had some shit to say about Saeed Nurmagomedov. I want to man's guillotining, choking him in a minute. Like, you know, he does what the Ovs do and the Nurmagomedovs do. And this guy's got beautiful blue eyes as well. So look at that. Look at that beautiful balance.
Yeah, man. He did well. The losses were standing out in my head because I remember, like, I remember the Raoni Barcelos fight being amazing and Martinez doing a good job of him. And then I looked at the other guys he was beat. I'm like, yeah, I mean, two guys that aren't with the UFC anymore. Cody Stamann, who is a decent guy, but like nothing special. Like, I just didn't think he had a whole lot. Now, whether Gafarov is that guy, I don't know.
Well, I mean, if he's getting guillotine choked in a minute, I mean, like, proof's in the pudding, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, good for him. He's got obviously moves into the rankings now.
I want to know what their fucking problem is, these guys. What's the problem with attaching a mustache to that beard? Like, what's with the hate of the mustache, guys? It's not getting in your fucking nose. Like, I mean, it's just match it all together. What's going on? Literally every single guy.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the look. That's the predominant look in the Urals. Like, that is...
They're just looking for a sweaty upper lip, aren't they? Is that the sexy thing? When it's hot out, you just walk around with a Sula, a sweaty upper lip alert, and, you know, just let it drain into your beard throughout the day? And then you can just... I don't know. I don't know what it is. Tell me.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you. I don't. But, yeah, that the mustaches would probably help. But, yeah, Ikram Iskarov, same thing.
Yeah.
A mustache would help a lot.
With a mouthful of fucking biscuits. Jesus Christ.
Try saying that with a mouthful of mustache. You just can't.
Maybe that's it.
Honestly, this card's kind of like been and gone now, so I don't want to go through every fight. What I will say is, if you know, there was a brutal nut kick shot with Basharat and Victor Henry, and then the worst part was Basharat got on Twitter and like was saying he was faking it. And Victor Henry looked in more pain than Danger Aaron after he got punched in the balls by Francis Ngannou. Like, it looked that bad.
Yeah, man. I actually felt a little bit sick looking at it because you're like, oh, I mean, you're either faking it really badly or you've literally just like, you know, lost your manhood forever. But I mean, you've seen like, you know, some fights where people get nut kicked really hard multiple times in a row. You get like, you know, maybe it's a Michael Venom Page fucking spinning back kick to the dick. And then it happens again. That guy still got up. What happened there? I don't know.
But apparently his balls were like swollen to the size of tangerines.
There you go. So at least it was a legitimate.
That's what his coach, the War Master Josh Barnett, got on Twitter afterwards and was like telling people about it. He was like, "Yeah, dude, it was," and it seemed like it, because it wasn't a direct kick to the groin. Like it seemed like there was some pinching between the cup and the leg or so. Like it wasn't good. Let's move on. I feel sick talking about it.
Yeah.
Move on. Yeah, Makhachev, he did well despite being down. He all of a sudden was just like, actually, no, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to beat you, Tim Elliott. And he actually did something to Tim Elliott, which never, ever happens. Tim Elliott loses to some of the top guys in the world, but he rarely gets stopped. And he only gets stopped by friggin' Brandon Royval, top of the tree. Davison Figueiredo, former champion. Like, he doesn't... In recent years, he hasn't been really stopped. He's lost to some top guys. But for Makhachev to get him and choke him out was really, really impressive and just a really nice performance. So, yeah, overall, it was a pretty good card. I think there was some... It was a weird... Like, there was obviously a lot of hype going into it, generated from the co-main and main replacements. And then the fact that the co-main didn't really catch fire and then we had the quick finish in the main event kind of just left you like,
yeah, it was like
what happened?
Yeah, like a little bit of a lackluster co-main, and then like, you know, followed by the just cut out quickly because of the last knockout, one of the fights and no decision. So it's like, yeah, it started off feeling like it was going to have this beautiful build up, and that's what we really love. It's like, you know, it gets to the main event and everyone's hyped, but because it was a little bit more staggered, it didn't really feel like it was up to the expectations of what we were expecting is to be one of the greatest cards of all time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that probably is flavored by the fact that Volkanovski got KTFO'd.
Yeah.
Broke my heart. That definitely, I'm sure Islam Makhachev fans are like, that's one of the greatest cards I've ever seen.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Maybe we are biased. Maybe we need to.
Oh no, I am. I made no bones about it, especially when it comes to Alexander Volkanovski. Come on. Right. Before we move on, we've got a card this weekend, fight in Brazil, actually. So it's going to be a good card, man. There's a Brazilian in every single fight, like top to bottom, I'm pretty sure, on one side. So
there's not
this,
that many Brazilians in the world, is there? What are you talking about? How are they finding all these people?
Especially faces as well.
It's not part of their culture.
So it's not even like it's in their culture. Before we get to that card, though, I just want to touch on UFC 295, the next pay-per-view coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Mm-hmm. Huge news. Obviously, John Jones ripped the shit out of his pec. He's out. Stipe's out. And they make a new... They bump up the co-main to the main event for the vacant 205 belt. Great. And then the co-main event, Interim Heavyweight Championship of the World between Tommy Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich, which is going to be unbelievable. And there's no way this fight goes the distance. And Tom Aspinall is going to be the UFC heavyweight champion of the world. I can smell it.
Tommy Aspinall.
Na 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 na. Tommy Aspinall. So good. Yeah, he's going to do it. I'm so confident. He's going to do it. He's going to get Pavlovich down and he's going to dominate him on the mat. He's going to do it. I feel good about this. I feel real good about this. And then he's going to get upgraded to full champion when Jones inevitably doesn't come back or doesn't want to fight for the belt and he just wants to fight Stipe or something like that. But you know what Tom Aspinall needs to do when he gets the belt?
Fucking yell at John Jones. Shout him, call him out. Mm-mm. Surely. Mm-mm. Tell me.
Someone else.
Who Tommy Aspinall should call out? Fucking Stipe. Derek Lewis. No. Daniel Cormier, obviously. Get him off the couch.
Francis Ngannou, the lineal heavyweight champion of the world. You call him out. His name is the biggest name in sports right now. We just talked about it. You get on the microphone and you say, John Jones, get healthy. I'll get you one day. Francis, I believe this used to be yours. Come and get it.
Ooh. You know what? I like it. I don't know how the UFC is going to...
Who gives? Who cares?
I like the thought, but I mean, like, probably more likely to get Tommy Aspinall for a day in the PFL for, and you know...
Can you imagine Madison Square Garden, the eyes of the world are watching Tommy Aspinall, interim strap on his massively, perfectly muscular shoulders. And he goes, Francis Ngannou, where you at, fella? Come and get it. Oh, that's the shout. That's the call. It doesn't matter if it doesn't go anywhere. Everyone starts talking about it because everyone's talking about his boxing. And he says, you ran away. You're scared. You say what you need to say. It doesn't matter. Yeah, capture the cultural zeitgeist right now. And that is Francis Ngannou. Call him out.
You know what? I like it. I like it a lot. I think now that, you know, Stipe has been put on ice and John Jones is obviously injured, who is the biggest name in the heavyweight division in UFC? And it's obviously between those two guys. Sergey Pavlovich has been on a fucking tear, but Tommy Aspinall probably is the guy. So, I mean, running out of star
Cyril Garn, right now, Cyril Garn shat it. So, like, Cyril Garn in France would be a big fight, but Cyril Garn didn't want it. He didn't want to fight Tom Aspinall, so that's why this fight got made. So Cyril Garn ran away from that fight because he knows he'll get taken down and strangled. So he doesn't need to do that twice in a row. He needs to build his stock back up. There is no one else. Stipe isn't going to fight Tom Aspinall. He doesn't... Yeah. It's not happening. It's legacy fights only. And the only fight for Stipe is John Jones. And the only fight for John Jones is Stipe.
I feel like Cyril Garn made a big fucking mistake doing that.
Huge mistake. This could have been him.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, think about the pay-per-views. England versus France as the main event. You know, like, you know, there's going to be a huge amount of, like, you know, just eyes on that. Historically, you know, speaking like this. And then you've got... Yeah, he didn't want to fight down in the rankings or something? It's fucking stupid. The guy's a goddamn monster. You know, it's the only time he's been defeated in recent history was because his leg fucking bonked out against Curtis Blaydes. So, yeah, man, I know if he manages to get that back and if Tommy Aspinall is, if he doesn't find a fight and if he's willing to, like, you know, just go through it anyway, I don't know, they'd have to pay him a shitload of cash. But, I don't know. Then again, if he wins and he has the belt, Cyril Garn hasn't got a fucking ticket in the race.
No, he has to fight someone else. He has to get another win on his resume, and all of a sudden Tom Aspinall's looking around going, who do I fight? Who is there? I tell you who there might be, because all of a sudden, how's this for a segue? If Derek Lewis knocks out Jailton Almeida, he might get the call up. Why not?
Well, Jailton Almeida's he's number six. So, I mean, he's even in a good position anyway. And this guy's a fucking monster. I love Derek Lewis. I'm always tuning in to watch Derek Lewis fight. I feel like most of the world is like this. The man's fucking star power. But Jonathan Almeida is just, he's just dominator. He is the next fresh, he's the fresh prince, man, of Brazil.
Yeah, but you know what? And I'm not even getting carried away with my Tommy Aspinall hype train yet. Tommy Aspinall stands Jonathan Almeida on his head. He doesn't have a shot. He can't stand with him. And Tommy Aspinall will match him on the ground. He won't make those mistakes that Jalton forces his opponents to do and give up their back. He won't do it. Yeah. And by the way, if Derek Lewis goes early and does Derek Lewis things like he did in his last fight, he could just bonk out Jalton Almeida and be like, yo, I'm back. But the most likely outcome is that Almeida takes him down and chokes him out. And you go, okay, all of a sudden you've got maybe Jalton Almeida, fresh face in there. But yeah, heavyweight division is all of a sudden like wide open looking for names, because Jones is out back end of next year. He's not coming back anytime. I know they said 8 months, but John Jones takes forever to get ready for a fight anyway. Yeah. Cyril Garn, you can't say no and then expect to walk back in. He's got to get a good win over someone. And then Pavlovich will have just been beaten. Miocic out of the pit. Unless Miocic comes back and says, Jones is hurt, upgrade Tom to the full champion and I'll come back and fight for the full belt. Maybe he'll do that.
Yeah.
But I just think he wants to fight John Jones, man. I don't think there's anything else to be done.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, if they're both on the back ends of their careers, they only got a couple of fights left, they're going to try to make the most star power out of that fight, right? I'm not even confident John Jones wants another fight. He's even alluded to retirement before, but I think he just wants to do the Stipe thing, make it the biggest event possible, go out on a shield and just, you know, I don't know. I think that would be him done. He would have made his money and, you know, he doesn't need to prove anything else. He's done all the stuff. You know, he did all the things.
That's it, man. He get one massive more huge payday. And if it's against Stipe, the belt doesn't even need to be there, because Stipe's recognized as the greatest heavyweight. Jones is recognized as the greatest. Like, the belt doesn't even need to be there for that fight to sell and to make sense. It's just two legends throwing down in their last ever fights. So, man,
I just want to say off the back end of this, I know that would have been the most exciting fight. But second most that's coming up on this card, and it's pretty close, Angela Hill versus Denise Gomez. One of the most interesting fights in recent history.
Well, it is, because hopefully we can see Angela Hill beaten down and taken out of the UFC by an absolute monster that is Denise Gomez. Yeah. We can only hope.
We'll see. Huh? I mean,
and oh, by the way, Denise Gomez has dyed her hair like bleach blonde, and like she's gone like the full Charles Oliveira. So she's going to come in. Angela Hill's on the hot seat. She's getting jerked up. Denise Gomez is going to get it done. There's a few of the good fights on this card as well. Kai Barayo against Abbas Magomedov should be quite good. Rodolfo Vieira against Armin Petrosian. Petrosian, very good striker. Gabriel Bonfim against Nicholas Dolby. Nicholas Dolby is just a marauding Viking. Throw him in there against absolutely anyone and the sparks will fly. There's just going to be blood for days. And then, of course, my guy, he's an underdog again. I'll be laying the green on Modestus Bukauskas against Vitor Petrino. I don't even know much about Vitor. I think he's come out of the Contender Series. But yeah, man, I'm always rolling with my guy, Modestus Bukauskas. So
absolutely.
But the crowd's going to be unreal. This is going to be a great event.
Just going on the eye test as well, Eduardo Moura. Yeah, it looks like a beautiful prospect to watch.
Oh no.
I'm going to fall in love. I'm going to move to Brazil, Lewis. This might be the card to do it.
You're serious. You're saying she's good looking?
Yeah. Don't you think? Okay.
I don't know.
I mean, anyone finding... would beat the shit out of me, I find attractive. So, I mean, like.
You know, well, that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Issues, yeah, but, you know,
yeah.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, going to be a good card. I probably won't watch it live this weekend because your boy's going to be busy. I'm heading over to Octagon 48 in Manchester. Octagon's first soiree into the UK market. Going to be absolutely unbelievable night of fights in the AO Arena in Manchester. There's a title fight on the line. Aaron Abey, he's got an unbelievable story. Just one of the most inspirational dudes. You've got Octagon Challenge winners or finalists competing to see who gets, it's basically Octagon's version of the Ultimate Fighter there on the card. There's a whole bunch of just really good, exciting fights on that card. And Octagon put on a show, like unbelievable production value. It's out of control. And the fact that it's their first show in the UK, I know they're going to go big and I know there's going to be a ton of surprises and it's going to be electric. So I'm there to cover that for Combat Sports UK. Going to talk to some fighters, you know, get some interviews up there. and just cover the event. And I can't wait. It's going to be absolutely phenomenal.
Awesome. That's awesome, man. Well, you know, represent the pod, do it well, do it justice, and fun over in the land of the free, huh? Back in the motherland, Manchester. I'm excited, man.
Back in the motherland. Brilliant. Let's get out of here. And the next episode, we'll come back and we're going to bring you a full UFC 295 preview next week. Of course, that's going to be something special to look forward to on what is an absolutely ridiculously good card.
So, guys, if you want to give us a review, that would be much appreciated. Let us know what you like. Give us 5 stars on Spotify, on Apple, on wherever you can find us. We really appreciate it. It helps keep this pod alive and it helps keep us... Yeah, fed and lovely and delivering you all the quality information that you're used to. You can find us on YouTube at Punchdrunk Pod with an extra D at the end. Twitter at Punchdrunk Pod or Instagram at Punchdrunk Pod. You can find Lewis at Lewis Glover MMA on Twitter, on socials. So be sure to follow him for some live banter and all the good stuff. You can follow me at Jamie Trezellian. Thanks for listening, guys. We appreciate it.
Peace.